and Chris, and this is my Writing Table podcast, where we talk to authors and other creatives about the writing world and what it takes to create the books that we love to read. Ready? Pull up a chair and let's begin.
Marilyn Simon Rothstein burst onto the women's fiction scene with Lift and Separate, which was released in December of 2016 and received the 2017 Star Award for Best Debut from the Women's Fiction Writers Association. Marilyn's second humorous novel, Husbands and Other Sharp Objects, was published in March of 2018, also by Lake Union. Marilyn is an engaging speaker who has addressed thousands of avid readers from Dallas to Atlanta, from Miami to Memphis. She has spoken extensively through the Jewish Book Council, entertained the members of philanthropic organizations, and enjoys all literary events. Marilyn grew up in New York City, earned a degree in journalism from NYU, began her writing career at 17 Magazine, married a man she met in an elevator, and owned an award-winning advertising agency for more than 25 years. Welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.
Your novels have just the right balance of heartbreak and humor and friendship and family. Have you always been a natural storyteller?
Yes, I have always been a storyteller. But most importantly, I think I've always been an observer. And I think to be a writer, you have to be someone who observes. And we all have people in our family who never notice anything. If you're a writer and you're someone who doesn't notice anything, there's nothing to write about.
Yeah, okay. Sometimes I'll be in the car with my husband and I'll say, that's interesting over there. And he'll go, what? And I'm like, how do you miss that? And now I get it. It's like, I'm a writer. He's just not paying attention to that stuff.
And when you notice something, you want to, I know I do, so you too, because of what you're saying. You want to keep in the story. Like if I'm at Starbucks and someone's sitting next to me and I notice something interesting about them, I want to hear what they're saying too. That's all part of the writer's personality.
You wrote for 17 Magazine and you ran a successful ad agency. So when did you know it was time to stop all that other nonsense and just write a novel?
Well, my dream my whole life was to write novels, but I went to NYU and I got a degree in journalism, and believe it or not, there were no ads for novelists in the newspaper. Back when people looked in the newspaper for a job, but I doubt there's any ads for novelists on Indeed today either. So I needed to support myself and I got a job. And as long as it was writing, I was so thrilled. First of all, to be in a magazine that I had read my whole life. And then they hired me as an assistant in the copy department, which meant I was sitting in the room with the writers. I was thrilled to death. And then as time went on, I decided to get into advertising, which I did. And the whole time I was writing fiction on and off. I wrote a complete book for my master's program that I took at Wesleyan, but I didn't put the effort in that needs to be put in to getting a book published. Getting published is harder than writing the book. And the first book I wrote, I got an agent in 5 days and she sent it out and I got these wonderful letters telling me what to change and to resubmit. But I must have been just dull in the head at the time because I put the manuscript in a drawer and didn't touch it for 20 years. And you're not going to believe this, but a manuscript in a drawer will not get published. So I then decided I was ready to get out of the advertising business because the advertising business is business. So although my background was copywriting, I was doing the business end of it too. I decided what I really wanted to do and had always wanted to do was not just write a novel, but to publish a novel. And that's what I set my mind on. And I started going to writers' workshops, writers' weekends, trying to get a background. Because when you go to school, they don't give you a background on the business of anything. Like, how does it work? How do you get published? So I started putting my efforts into that and trying to meet people. And I joined a workshop that I've been in for 12 years now. And that got me on the road to doing what I wanted to do.
So did you ever pull that manuscript out of the drawer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have two manuscripts that I haven't published. One I wrote in college. And the other one was the one that I wrote when I was at Wesleyan.
Once you decided, okay, I need to give it more time, be more dedicated to actually writing, and you were going to conferences and stuff, how long did it take before you had a manuscript ready to submit to an agent?
All I can say is that from the day I said, this is it, I'm doing it, to the day Lake Union bought it was 10 years. Now, I wasn't strapped into a chair for 10 years. So I can't tell you how long were you writing, how many hours. I'm a very chaotic person, so I don't even have an exact time that I write. But the entire thing from starting to the manuscript being bought took 10 years.
And that was Lift and Separate. Tell us a little bit about Crazy to Leave You.
I enjoy writing stories about women who find their strength, who something happens to them and they have to pick up and figure out what to do, what they really want, take a different road. And this is the story of a 41-year-old advertising executive in New York who has great friends, a great job, a great apartment, a great if annoying family, and really wants to take the step of getting married and having a family. She meets the guy she wants to marry, who she actually knew at camp when she was 13, and he leaves her at the altar. So she has to recover from what she calls the great humiliation. She no longer calls it the wedding. She calls it the great humiliation. And she's got some problems because, you know, dealing with that and then dealing with the patriarchal advertising agency where she's got the kind of boss who never saw a skirt he didn't think should be shorter. Her mother has been body shaming her whole life. Her mother is size 4 and shops in a store called 4. Okay. So I like to joke, I shop in a store called 22 and a half. But anyway, I almost wanted to call the book Pass the Brownies or Die, but then someone said it sounded like a thriller. They're at the table with her family after the great humiliation, and there's brownies on the table, and she really wants a brownie. And her mother, the body shamer, says, but there's fruit. And she looks at her mother and she says, Mom, pass the brownies or die. So there you go. That would have been the name of the book had it not been Crazy to Leave You. Pass the brownies or die. So she has to overcome this loving, interfering family, her body-shaming mother, where she's going to go with her career, because now her career seems more important to her. She realizes how much she likes it. And a bunch of other decisions about where she's going to live and who she's going to be close with and make it to the other side.
I have faith she will.
Of course, because we're all going to make it to the other side.
Yeah.
You've got to think like that.
Especially with a good sense of humor. That'll help. Why did you choose women's fiction?
I grew up in a family of 3 girls. Most of my friends are women. A woman's life is my background. And I've always loved books about family. The more depressing, the better. I mean, if it makes you cry, I'm very happy. If you give me, you know, a depressive brother and sister duo, I'm like in heaven.
You mentioned your ad agency. There was a lot of business that you had to attend to. Mm-hmm. So how does that background inform how you manage the business of bookselling?
I think having been in the advertising business gives you a background in marketing. And once the book is sold to the publishing house, you're out there promoting the book. And having a background in marketing helps you see things the way you would see it for a client, but it's different because you're seeing it for yourself, which is why I always say shameless self-promotion, I call it. Because when you promote someone else, you're shameless about promoting the other person. But now all of a sudden, you have to be shameless about promoting your book, which is pretty much you.
Right.
So you take those marketing techniques and apply them, yet it feels sort of funny because, you know, you're blasting your own horn.
Well, and I think a lot of authors or readers in general say, you've sold your book to a publisher. Don't they do all the promotion? Mm-hmm. And so maybe you could speak to that a little bit. You know, you have a publicist. I have a publicist. Mm-hmm. What does the publicist do for you that the publisher doesn't?
First of all, that's how it used to be, I hear. You know, people who were published 20 years ago tell me that's how it was. They made a big party for you when your book came out. Now you're not going to get a party unless you make it yourself. And that sort of goes with everything from what I hear from all the other authors. You're out there doing a lot of the promotional stuff on your own, no matter what kind of publisher you have. That's what I hear from other people I know. There you go.
It's not just writing, a lot of business.
Oh. Yeah, in the sense that advertising, you can't just be a copywriter because the ad will never get into the newspaper. I don't think in novel writing anymore, you can just be a writer.
Agree.
The other thing is a lot of writers are introverts. So this is really hard to go put yourself out there is really hard. I did a lot of speaking with my first book. And the first time I got up, it was in Atlanta. And I had never spoken in front of people before, except to say, welcome women to Women in Communications, which I was the president of in Hartford. Okay. Our speaker will be. And now someone's saying our speaker will be you. And now I've got to talk. So it's pretty earth shaking.
I'll bet. Looking back, what have you learned from your first to your third novel?
It's endless. What I didn't know it could fill volumes. Okay. What I still don't know could fill volumes. It is its own industry, and it is so much beyond just the writing. Mm-hmm. Give you an example. I thought that, you know, I worked on this book for 10 years. Now they're going to take it and they're going to make the ands, buts, maybe put in a comma, and maybe I spelled somebody's name wrong. And then they're going to give it back to me and I'm going to give it back to them. And then we have a book. No. We're first working on the story, okay? Because they have ideas that will make it a better book, which I realized immediately, yet was surprised because I had no idea that that was part of the game, even after going to all these writers' weekends where they talked about stuff like that. It never occurred to me. I thought it just went from me to the proofreader. I didn't know there were three editors in between me and the proofreader.
Yeah, I'd query and I'd get back notes from an agent to do an R&R and he'd go, why do you have to change it again? I thought you just changed it. It's like, I saw it as every time I change it, it gets better. And he's seen it like you fixed a car. So why do you have to go in and take it apart and fix it again? I was like, no, that's not the way it works.
You know, that's the best description, that it's not like a car. It's not. My husband, the sharp object, will no longer read the book until it's in the very final draft. Okay. Because he feels cheated. Because if he reads it like, you know, after copy edit 2, he's down the pike, it's a totally different book at copy edit 5. Now he reads it when it's actually pretty close to being the arc. I wouldn't want to waste the sharp object's time. You know how it is.
I love it. Tell our listeners why you call him the sharp object.
Well, I call him the sharp object because I wrote a book called Husbands and Other Sharp Objects. And people say to me, why did you call it Husbands and Other Sharp Objects? And it's basically because I feel that the people closest to you are the most likely ones to do you in. Okay. I mean, everything they do can hurt you. Whereas a stranger on the street, it's not a sharp object. That's why I came up with the name Husbands and Other Sharp Objects for the book. And I refer to my husband as the sharp object and he gets a big kick out of it. He's got a great sense of humor, thank God, because otherwise I'd be in trouble.
Describe your writing day. I know you said it's different, but most of the time, what do you do when you're drafting a book?
My favorite thing to do is to write first thing in the morning. I'm a morning person. I've always been a morning person. Can also write a lot at night. I am not a middle of the day writer. Okay. I will find about 100 things to do so that I don't have to write in the middle of the day. I'm really a morning or a night person. I have a lot of favorite places to write. I like to write in my house at my kitchen table. I have an office, but I use it mostly for storage of manuscripts in the computer. And I love libraries. I have like my three favorite libraries. One's in my hometown, one's in New York City. And the other library is wherever I travel, I love to go to the library.
That New York Public Library. I spent like 5 days, I don't know how many summers ago, I put my backpack on and I'd wander through the city until I landed somewhere to write. And I felt like, you know how in the movie Sabrina, she says she met herself in Paris. I felt like, I don't know, I was like 47. I feel like I met myself in New York. When you're writing and you're sitting in that New York Public Library for the first time, it's just, mm-hmm.
Were you on 42nd wow. Street? You were in the 42nd Street Library?
The one that's behind Bryant Park.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's heaven. You know, I grew up in New York, so I've been to that library my whole life. I take pictures still. I can't help myself from like, especially since we have the phone, of taking pictures. The other library, next time you're in New York, at Lincoln Center, is a library of the arts. I happen to like that one. That's modern. You know, it doesn't have the ancient feeling, but it's a great library to go to.
Oh, got it on my list now. Are you a plotter, pantser? How do you come up with your stories?
I do not outline. I write the book actually in pieces. Like if I wake up in the morning and I think that I really have a good idea for a scene in a doctor's office where your gynecologist daughter talks to your urologist. That's a scene. Those two gynecologists. What a great scene. Yes. If tomorrow morning I wake up and think I'm going to have a table with a gynecologist and a urologist at it, I will sit down and write that scene. And then I will jigsaw it around to where it's going to go in the story.
Like I was saying earlier, you balance the meat of the story with a lot of fun, a lot of humor. And so I was wondering, it sounds like it's just all very organic. It just comes to you as a piece, whether it's humorous or tender.
Don't you just love when people say the book wrote itself?
If only.
Right. Every time I hear someone, the book wrote itself, I'm like, how come that doesn't happen to me? I think the books are a lot about the way I am. And I take serious subjects, things that are serious to me, to heart, yet I'm able to laugh about it. I happen to come from a family where we're close enough to be able to laugh.
Nice.
Without hurting people's feelings. So that's where it comes from.
What can readers depend on when they read a Marilyn Rothstein novel?
Oh, I think you're going to receive something heartwarming. I think my outlook is very heartwarming. It's people who want to make their lives better, make their families better, and you'll find that, and you'll find this feeling of warmth.
When you began writing, who was your inspiration?
I was born wanting to write. I doubt that I can do anything else. I once demonstrated men's razors in Macy's. Okay, that was a hook. But even that, doing that, I felt totally uncomfortable, you know, which you can imagine being like 20 years old, standing in Macy's and showing the guy how the razor works. I mean, they talk about a job that doesn't exist anymore for a woman.
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to be a writer. When I was at NYU, there was a teacher who, he's long gone, may he rest in peace, John Tebble. He was also connected with Columbia University Journalism School. And he challenged me. He said, everybody was writing short stories. I wrote 20 pages and he said to me, why don't you write a novel? What, this could be a novel. And then he took it to his agent. So it didn't get published because I didn't keep working on it, which is one of those problems, obviously, I had, which was why I got published at 63. But he inspired me because he thought I could do it and he was willing to take it to somebody else. So I would have to say, I never thought about it, but John Tebble was a big inspiration to me.
You know, you want to write, you write this thing and you're writing and you believe in it until somebody else looks at it. And then it's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Somebody validates it. It's like, yeah. I might be able to do this. It's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
when I stood in his office and he said, keep writing. And I came back and he said, I'm taking this to my agent. I'm like, wow. And that gave me a lot of confidence back then.
Oh, I'll bet. What's next for you?
Well, I'm working on a fourth book, which I've decided is too much at the beginning to talk about what it's about.
Gotcha.
But of course, it will be women's fiction, and it will be in the line of the type of books that I write.
Awesome.
And also, I'm out touring. I'm going to North Carolina on Tuesday to go to Flyleaf Books, and I'll be in Chicago in July. So I am touring around with Crazy to Leave You.
Isn't this fun to be able to tour in person again?
You know, it is fabulous. It is fabulous because seeing people in person makes it so much easier to relate to them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, do you have any tips for new writers?
Oh, yeah. If you're a new writer, write. I know that sounds like a really short tip, but if you don't write, you can't be a writer. I mean, it's that simple. It's that kind of thing, right? Because it's an art. And if you do start writing, join a writer's workshop. And you can find them at the library. You can find them online, especially if you're online a lot. If you join WFWA, the Women Fiction Writers Association, I know they have a lot of writers who have hooked up to form groups. And the reason I'm saying this is it's really good to find a writing community. And it's really good to read your stuff to people. Because you really don't know. I was saying the other day to someone that when I go into my writer's group, sometimes there's something I think is funny. Nobody laughs at that. They laugh at the line after it. And I'm like, what? But if I hadn't gone into a workshop, how would I even know that? So I would say write and build your community.
Thank you, Marilyn.
It was great to meet you.
To learn more, visit MarilynSimonRothstein.com.
If you're enjoying The Writing Table, please consider leaving us a review. There are so many podcasts out there. Reviews help other listeners find us. Thanks so much for your support.